Everybody, I'm Beattie Cohen-Fratos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And I have to say, it's pretty hard to be depressed or anxious when you hear this really uplifting intro song. So thank you, producers WPRO. In fact, WPRO was the very first radio show in Providence, Rhode Island, where I had a call-in counseling radio talk show. Talk about going back in history. But again, I want to thank the producers here at PRN for choosing this really uplifting song. Well, everyone, as you know, and for those people who are tuning in for the very first time, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I am the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I'm also a columnist and a recent advice columnist for Dan's papers in the Hamptons. So you can send me in your questions and your comments to Dan's paper. And of course, my email is beattiecohen.msw@gmail.com. And I'm also a national speaker where I go around the country. Of course, these years, it's really mostly been on Zoom, teaching people my 10-step fail-safe formula based on my research with 450 people and my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, that teaches all of us. Now, listen up, okay? This formula is a formula that teaches us how to assess. Yes, it's not sexy, it's not romantic, but it teaches us how to accurately assess who's right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And given the divorce rate in this country, I mean, I look at the statistics, 48% of first marriages end in divorce, 67% of second marriages also end in a divorce court. And one would hope, you know, after a first divorce, after a second divorce, that somehow we would figure it out and have, better luck. But the reality, my friends, is that for third marriages, 74% of couples marrying for the third time, they too end up in a divorce court. And really what I have discovered over the years, and for those of you who've been listening to the show for the last many, many years, you've heard me say this, and I really hope that you do take this in, that there are basically three things, only three things, but they're really important things that we actually need to do if we ever hope to find and maintain a successful relationship with anyone. And of course, it begins with us. The first thing is that each of us needs to be in a really good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, and we have to be willing to deal with our issues. We all have issues, our past issues, our traumas, things that happened and didn't happen in our lives, sexual abuse, sexual assault, growing up in very dysfunctional, abusive families. The reality is, of course, is that we can't change history. We can't change anything that happened even a second ago. But over the past 35 years as a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist, I have figured out how to help people, and I can help you too, emotionally work through the traumas from our past, our unfinished business, our skeletons in the closet. Now, what that means, of course, is that we can't change history. And working through traumas, in my view, it doesn't mean ever forgetting. I mean, we're never going to forget traumas that have occurred to us or even forgiving. But there is a process that can really help you get to a place in your life as you revisit. And I can't pretend that it's like going to a tea party. A lot of painful things that happened and didn't happen in our lives. But in going through this process, perhaps for the first time in your life, you will find yourself being able to really live in the moment, live in the present, without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And people who I treat, and I have a private practice here in New York City and also at East Hampton, my patients are my heroes because it is not easy. It takes a lot of courage to say to yourself, look, I have a lot of things that are not working for me and my life. And I am willing and I am prepared to take a very, very honest, hard look to try to resolve things so that I maybe for the first time in my life will be able to live a happier and joyful existence with myself and with others. So again, you know, I talk a lot about the importance of doing things that are in our best interest versus engaging in destructive and self-destructive activities and self-sabotaging behaviors. And we know what happens, right? If we're doing a lot of self-destructive and destructive and self-sabotaging things, there is no way at all that we are going to be able to live happy and healthy lives. And in fact, that's the homework. I give every single one of my patients the same homework at the end of every session. And it's homework that I would like to give you as well to really think about, as you are going through your days, you're going through your weeks, whether or not you are doing things, living your life in ways that are really in your best interest. And what, of course, I'm asking you to do is to be mindful. And then when you start to see yourself veering off course, hopefully there's going to be like red lights going off in your head, which will be a reminder to get back on a constructive and empowering path. And, you know, for a lot of people, we need coaches. And, you know, I think about as an athlete, I mean, I was number 10 in Canada as a junior tennis player. My father was my coach. And you look at athletes, you look at people who are in the performing arts. We have managers, we have coaches. And, you know, one of the things that I'm hoping that I've been able to convince you over all of these years is that we don't need to navigate life's challenges and ups and downs on our own. And it is not a weakness. It is a real strength if we get to a place in our lives where we need a coach. And of course, in the mental health world, I mean, there are therapists of all different kinds. And of course, not all therapists have equal amounts of training and expertise. But if you look at it as just needing a support, needing a coach, and it can certainly help to make all of our lives a lot easier. So again, if we're hoping and wanting to have a successful relationship with anyone, we need to be okay. And of course, we all need to be willing to become students of relationship education. And we need to learn the ingredients that go into healthy relationships. And then I talk a lot about my 10-step formula, because it is an assessment guide that tells you exactly the things that you need to look for to make sure that you are going to end up in a relationship that is really going to be good for you. And, you know, one of the things about the research and the results of the research that I found really, really disappointing, and by the way, the research was done with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut areas, is that in order to do a really in-depth assessment, my kind of assessment, to find out who your partner really is and who your partner may really not be, it's going to take about a year. And unfortunately, you really can't fast forward that process. I mean, obviously, if you're seeing somebody early on who is abusive in any way, who has substance abuse issues, or who is treating you in a really shabby, disgusting, and abusive fashion, you're not going to stay in for a year. But what I found is that in order to really play out all of the different ingredients to find out, for example, how well people are able to communicate. I mean, it's really easy when you're talking about communication and you're saying, well, what restaurant are we going to go to, or what hotel should we book into? It's something very, very different when issues arise. And of course, issues arise in all of our relationships. And, you know, people frequently will say to me, well, Beattie, what do you think really are the most important ingredients that make or break a relationship? And I used to apologize with my answers, because the real answers are emotional communication and problem solving. Because if we can't communicate, and if we are not with someone who has really great problem solving skills, of course, that means that we also have to hone great problem solving skills. We are definitely going to flounder. And when we talk about intimacy, I talk about intimacy in a very different way than a lot of people. When people refer to intimacy, most people seem to think about sex. When I talk about intimacy, I talk about caring and sharing and love and respect and consideration and the importance of playing all of this out in real life situations to see, is your partner capable of respect and consideration and love and respect and honesty? And, you know, I wish I could say that we could really find all of these things out quickly, because we are in a very fast-moving society. I mean, just look at the technology. If our computers are, you know, if it takes a little bit longer than a minute to be able to get on a site, we start to feel frustrated. But the fact is that in real life, it really does take a while to really find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. So that when I talked about, you know, the reality of needing to really play out the assessment for about a year, you know, I want young people to know and older people to know that even though you may meet somebody and you may say, oh, this is the person who I think I would really love to spend my life with, I think it's great fantasy. It may be great for a play, but it is not something that really works typically in the real world. So we have to be very, very careful who we let into our lives. And, you know, I tell the story that before I did the research and did the book, I was someone and I would meet someone and I would say, you know, I really met this terrific woman, or I met this really great guy who's just so nice and so honest. And what I learned after all of my work is that I would never, ever, ever make that kind of a statement today. And the best I could say today would be, I met somebody, and think about this, who appears to be great and wonderful and honest and trustworthy and respectful. And just like in a tennis match, we need to play out all the points in every single game before we are going to be able to figure out who has won the set. And it's the same kind of thing that we need to do in our relationships. So we need to slow down and we need to be very, very careful. In fact, I was talking to the president last week of the American Domestic Violence Association, and we were just lamenting. We were lamenting the domestic violence statistics. And, you know, I keep saying, with all the self-help books and therapists and retreats and movies, and we're focusing more and more on mental health and domestic violence, which is a really, really positive thing. The reality is that four women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And what I've been trying to do for years is to have schools, junior high schools and high schools and colleges really implement my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again program again, which teaches people exactly the ingredients that go into a healthy, long-lasting relationships, and then how to go and out and do a really, really in-depth assessment. So that's really my ongoing passion and what I am wanting more and more to do professionally is to find a way where relationship education would begin very, very early on. Because if we look at TV shows and people are on videos all the time, we're still not doing very well. In fact, one would have hoped that there would be some changes, positive changes in the divorce rate, in the domestic violence statistics rate, and yet that is not happening. So I am definitely planning to continue on with my journey in terms of trying to connect with decision makers in education, social services, and the domestic violence field, because we are clearly missing the boat. And when I talk about the importance of relationship education and the importance of people really learning how to make great relationship assessments, this is not something for me that's self-serving, or it is not something about just, you know, trying to sell books. What I am trying to do is to see whether or not there can be some kind of positive impact in terms of our being able to see a decrease in divorce statistics, and clearly a decrease in what is going on in the field of domestic violence. I mean, I look at what's happening in the teenage dating world. I mean, when I was a kid growing up in Winnipeg, I didn't know anybody. I mean, even though I'm sure that, you know, people really never quite know what goes on behind closed doors, who ever talked about dating abuse? And yet in this country, and I want you to listen to these really dismal statistics, nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. So let's just say that there is a lot of work that we need to do when it comes to relationships. But if we're talking about some other things that we need to do that are in our best interest, of course, Dr. Gary Null talks about this every single day, the importance of eating healthily and interacting and socializing and not just being by ourselves. I mean, sometimes just getting out and even just saying hello to a stranger can do some wonderful, wonderful things to our serotonin levels and make us feel a lot better. And of course, the importance of getting enough sleep and taking naps. And this morning was a perfect example of where I had to remind myself to do what was in my best interest. As I had mentioned previously, I have an issue with seasonal affective disorder when there isn't a lot of sun, and I have to be very careful and very, very mindful of doing things, of exercising, of getting enough sleep, of drinking enough water so that I am not going to get really, really down. So this morning, I had my weekly lesson with my tennis pro. And I said to my husband, Jim, you know, it's cold, it's windy, there wasn't a lot of sun, that I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to go out to the tennis courts, even though it was literally just walking out the door on Riverside Drive here in New York City. And I reminded myself that it's not enough to just talk the talk and tell my patients and tell people about being mindful and doing what is in our best interest. So I got dressed, and yes, it was windy, and yes, it was chilly because the tennis courts happened to be on the Hudson River. But I'll tell you, as soon as I got out on the courts, it was the best decision that I had made for the morning. I felt so much better. I was hitting well. Yes, it was cold, and I could have complained about the cold and the wind. And yet, after an hour hitting, I felt my mood was good. I was really looking forward to doing the show. And there was a real switch that I could feel that just happened within myself. So I cannot say enough, of course, about the importance of exercise, including weight training, and for some people who really enjoy yoga and meditation and massage, and sometimes just taking a nice bubble bath, anything and all the things that we can do to help us de-stress in our lives. And, you know, Gary Null, he talks a lot about toxins, you know, chemical toxins. And, you know, when I talk about toxins, I talk about toxins in terms of toxic people. And sometimes that means friends and families. And over the years, what I have developed for myself, and I must say, this was something that was not easy, I have a zero toxicity policy. I don't want anyone in my life who is poisonous. And, you know, somebody will say, well, he or she is only toxic on occasion. And for those of you who know me, and for those of you who've been listening to the show for all of these years, you know what I'm going to say, that a little bit of poison, my friends, happens to be poison. And a little bit of poison can kill us, just like a lot of poison can. So other things that we can do that are in our best interest, dancing, listening to music, getting out into nature. It does wonderful things for the chemicals in our brain. Some people, I'm not one of these people, but a lot of people really enjoy, you know, herbal teas and aromatherapy and essential oils. And I was reading an article, which, you know, I'm going to talk with you about a little later in the show, about the importance, what helping others and what giving back. really does for us. And there was this article in the New York Times, and it was written by Jane Brody, who has a regular column. And the headline was "Nurturing Kindness Early On Has Its Rewards." And the author was emphasizing that everyone benefits when children are taught empathy very, very early on. You know, little kids, they can be taught that it's really important to be able to give back and help others, and that it is not always, always about them. And it makes such a difference in how children are being raised. And of course, little kids that are being raised, they become adults. And the importance of really being aware of the importance of giving back and of empathy. It's a very, very important thing that we can do for our children. In fact, there was an article that was talking about the actual rewards of teaching compassion and kindness to a new generation, that little kids, they need to be aware of things over and above what they are going to get. And we don't want to raise self-centered children. And many young people, you know, I think they need to be aware of what is going on in our social context. They need to be aware of racism and gender inequality and income inequality. And they can be taught as little children the small little things that they can do to make a difference. And you know, how do we not emphasize the importance when we're raising children, and of course, as we are adults ourselves, the importance of kindness and compassion, and putting our kind and compassionate thoughts into action. I mean, that's the kind of society that we are hoping to have, and the kind of society that we really want to live in. So we need to do a much, much, much better job when we are raising our little children to teach them that it is not always about them, that it is not always about them. And that is where all of this really needs to begin. I think that we start oftentimes so very, very late in life, where we're trying to educate, you know, people about being compassionate and caring about the issues, the political issues of the day. And I think that we need to do a much, much better job in beginning this kind of education early on. You know, other things that we can do that are in our best interest: journaling, so that we're really in touch with what it is that we are feeling. And if we're looking at diets, to be aware of eliminating sugars and sodas and alcohol and nicotine and all toxins, including toxic people. So there's a lot to do. There are a lot of things that we need to think about, that we need to be mindful about, so that we're going to be able to live happy and joyful lives. Some other things that I wanted to mention to you, you know, as we're ending 2021, I can hardly believe how quickly this year is gone. And I think that it's a good time for all of us to take a long, hard look at our lives and ask ourselves some really important questions. You got to be honest with yourself, even though this kind of questioning and introspection may initially yield some painful revelations. But on this show, you know, we talk about real stuff, and we talk about empowerment, and we talk about the work that we all need to do, the inner work that we all need to do so that we are going to be able to live our lives being in a good place emotionally and psychologically, and of course, physically as well. So I have some questions that I want to ask you. Question number one, am I happy with the quality of my relationships with my partner, if you're lucky enough to have a partner, my children, my grandchildren, my friends, and business associates? And take some time and think about it. Now, naturally, there are always going to be ups and downs in our relationships, but overall, are you happy with the quality of people who you have in your life? Question number two, am I satisfied with the state of my health, my emotional health, my psychological health, my physical health, my spiritual health, and my sexual health? You know, you have to just sometime just stop and give yourself some time and permission to ponder these really important questions. Question number three, am I living a financially responsible life? You know, am I in debt? Am I buying too many products on Amazon? Am I in a good place with my financial situation? Number four, how do I feel about the overall quality of my life? You know, I ask people on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 is terrible, 10 is wonderful. Where would you put yourself in terms of the overall quality of your life? So after doing your initial analysis, and I'm hoping that you're actually going to do it, to think about it. Am I happy with the quality of my relationships? Am I satisfied with the state of my health? Am I living a financially responsible life? And how do I feel about the overall quality of my life? So after doing this initial analysis and self-evaluation, the real question, my friends, is whether you are prepared to actually do something, not just think about it, not just complain about it, but to do something about any or all of these areas that require some attention or changes. Remember, it's not what you say, it's what you do. It's not just what you think, it's what we're able to actually put into practice. So in evaluating your personal relationships, you may be one of the fortunate people whose relationships are primarily satisfying and happy. So remember, if you are one of these really fortunate people, remember to continue to enjoy them and nurture them every day. Relationships need to be nurtured. They do not remain wonderful and terrific and loving unless we take care of them as we do our plants. Because at the end of our lives, this is what I certainly believe, that we will realize that what really matters, what really, really matters, it's not the big house and the expensive car and the big trips, but it is the quality of our relationships with the people that we love. And on the other hand, you may be forced, if you're being honest with yourself, to admit to yourself that certain of these relationships are disappointing and frustrating. And at worst, you may have to acknowledge to yourself that they are destructive and self-destructive. So you now need to ask yourself, as you're going through this honest self-evaluation, whether you are finally prepared to tackle the various different relationship problems that you are experiencing, of course, one at a time. We can't do everything at once, you know, all at the same time, so as to attempt to make some positive changes in the quality of your own life or your relationships. Or, okay, you also have a choice. Like many, many people, you may prefer to just continue to complain about the state of your life and do nothing. And one thing I can tell you for sure is that if you choose to complain and do nothing, that nothing will probably ever change. So ultimately, the choice is really yours. And, you know, my father used to say to me every day, he used to say, Beattie, that today is a new day. The sun may not have come up yesterday, but today there are possibilities, and we have to decide, what are we going to do with today, since we can't change yesterday, to improve the quality of our life and the quality of our relationships? So it really boils down in so many ways to loving ourselves, because you can't really love anyone, someone, until you really love yourself. And over the years, I've discovered that the majority of people, and that's been one of the great things of being a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist for over 35 years. And when I say over 35 years, I don't even know where that time has gone. I mean, I remember when I was in graduate school at McGill University in Montreal. And, you know, have had so many wonderful, wonderful opportunities to meet and to treat people from every single walk of life with every single conceivable kind of problem. People that I would have never met in my own personal, my own personal little life. But what I have discovered is that the majority of people who are genuinely happy with their lives are not rich and famous and beautiful, and nor were they immune from life's traumas and tragedies. In fact, there's only one primary difference that I've found over all these years between people who wake up every morning thankful to be alive, looking forward to the day ahead, and people who are embittered about life, who may be caught in a downward spiral of depression or anxiety or substance abuse of various different kinds or other psychiatric problems, that the latter group tends to complain. I mean, you know people like this, and I know people like this. They complain about their difficulties and disappointments. But the happy group, and I say the happy group in quotes, they acknowledge, they are willing to acknowledge, address, and make every possible effort to resolve their issues. Of course, we can't change history, whatever they may be. And it is this group that I have found who seeks out professional help when necessary and who is prepared to tackle problems head on. And these are, in my view, these are the mentally and emotionally healthy ones. You know, they're the people who I see in my office every day, and everybody who contacts me, you know, they'll say it was really difficult making that initial call. You know, you're at a point in your life when you realize you've tried exercise, you've tried eating well, and yet there are things that are just not working. So it's difficult. It's difficult to begin therapy. But these people, they're my heroes. They are men And women, yes, I get a lot of calls from men of all ages and stages in life who have issues with depression and issues with sexual dysfunction of various different kinds. So they're men and women, they're young and old, they're single, they're married, they're separated, they're divorced, they're widowed, they're gay, they're straight, they're transgender. But these people, my heroes, they are determined to finally put to rest what I call their skeletons in the closet and their, in quotes, unfinished business that continue to play havoc with our present. And happily, you know, most of the people who I work with, they really do succeed, I think, beyond their wildest dreams and expectations, never realizing that dealing with their issues could have such an amazingly positive impact on their current lives. Because you think about it, at different times in our lives, we're all confronted with a variety of problems and challenges. A baby is born stillborn with an incurable disease. A parent or loved one dies. A marriage is dissolved. We don't want the marriage to be dissolved, but the marriage is dissolved. A friend or lover betrays us. An illness strikes. And it is how well or how poorly that we emotionally deal with our own personal problems that will determine whether we get through them or not, or whether we will remain stuck. Because we all know people who, regardless of their pain and suffering, they will tell us that everything is just fine. You know people like that. They can be going through the worst of times and they're going to say, yes, oh, everything is cool. Everything is fine. But whether it is to convince others or themselves, these people never emotionally deal with their upset, their pain, or their frustrations, their disappointments, their loneliness, their anger, their feelings of alienation and angst and fears. These people, they mask, or at least they try to mask their feelings or escape using a variety of different defense mechanisms, such as avoidance and denial. Everything is fine, or blaming. No, my problems are all because of you. Or they suppress their feelings, or they sublimate them, or they project them. Or you know people who are really defensive. They have a lot of issues, but they are defensive with you about virtually everything. Or perhaps work, or alcohol, or drugs, or pornography, or gambling, or extramarital affairs, or other self-destructive behaviors and activities are used as yet another means of escape. We know people who will work 24 hours a day, and we know a lot of people who will drink to excess or use drugs. Anything to find a way to escape from the pain that they are, are dealing with, but are not dealing with. Because of expressing our feelings was something that was never learned or nurtured. And I think a lot of people, you know, have never learned to express how they really feel. It can be associated, you know, expressing our feelings, that's weak, it's a failure, there's turmoil or ridicule. That person unfortunately learned early on to turn off all emotions. And believe me, that expressing your feelings is a strength. It is never, never a weakness. So when you think about the consequences of not stepping up to the plate to deal with one's demons and to do what is really in our best interest. In my practice over the years, the majority of people upon entering therapy had a variety of not just emotional issues, but physical problems, including insomnia, depression, high blood pressure, panic attacks, migraines, gastrointestinal issues, high cholesterol, back problems, ulcers, colitis, and the variety of other aches and pains. It goes on and on and on. And almost all had relationship problems as well. But when my patients began to give themselves permission to finally, once and for all, deal with their psychic pain, the majority began to feel much better, not only emotionally, but physically as well. So what are the consequences to keeping a stiff upper lip? What I have found, the consequence is disaster. Because if we continually stuff our emotions, these unexpressed feelings will surely and do find a place to lodge somewhere within our body. And I am so curious. I know that many of you are listening to the show right now and you're listening to what I'm saying. And I'm so curious what it is you are feeling, what it is you are thinking, how all of this applies to you. And of course, more importantly, if it does apply to you, the question then becomes, what are you going to do about all of this? So what is emotional and mental health? Well, in my view, emotional and mental health occurs when we successfully are ready to face our pain so that it can be put to rest as best as it can be, even though we cannot change our history. It is only then, I believe, that we are truly able to embrace life and live in the present and live in the moment. And I also believe, you know, that's really the first order of business, that that we are then ready and able to have successful and loving relationships with ourselves and with others as well. And again, I would be just so thrilled to be able to hear from you. And I wonder, what are you thinking about all of this? Well, I read an article, and I wanted to share this with you, and I'm going to have the doctor, Dr. Lynn Lance, who's a psychiatrist, on my show in late December. And this was big, big news. Stanford's capital S, capital A, capital I, capital N, T, Saint study, a TMS breakthrough for depression. And in synopsis form, it has been definitively proven, and I want to hear a lot more about this when I speak to Dr. Lance, that transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, is an effective treatment for treatment-resistant depression. That means depression that has not responded to medication and it hasn't responded to therapy. However, there are aspects to TMS that make it harder to access, such apparently as daily treatment for weeks and cost. And the researchers in the Stanford Saint study, they have gone on to talk a lot about their research, and Dr. Lance, who is somebody in the Northwest, who is a real advocate for this therapy, he is going to be talking to us, as I say, at the end of December about what his experience has been in using TMS. Because psychotherapy is and will always be the foundation of treatment for depression. And antidepressants are often the next step in treatment when the psychotherapy is really not doing the trick. Although some people with depression instead choose to try antidepressants first. And I think that's really a mistake. I think that, you know, let's try and deal with the history. Let's try and deal with the root of the problem, the depression. And let's see then whether or not there is a need for antidepressant medication. That is certainly my bias. But if they are not seeing a good response, and I know people who've been on a multitude of antidepressant medications and have tried a variety of different kinds of psychotherapy, and yet their depression remains to be a significant problem in their life. So the new treatment, again, according to Dr. Lance, according to a lot of other research, is an absolute game changer. And it is this transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS therapy. And apparently, it does not require psychiatric medication to work. Apparently, it works when traditional treatments such as medication and therapy are failing, and TMS therapy, it is FDA approved, and scientific research proves that it works. So how does it work? Well, it uses high intensity magnetic pulse to stimulate different areas in the brain. And I'm just really, really looking forward to having Dr. Lance on the show and having him tell us about his experience in working with TMS. And I think that we really have to be, you know, we have to be open to new treatments. And again, I see a couple of people in my own practice who've tried everything. They've been in therapy forever, and they've tried every single type of antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication on the market, and yet their depression remains very, very severe and very, very debilitating. So again, I'm going to keep you posted about the exact date that Dr. Lance is going to be on the show. Another article that I happened to read was, the title was, "Our Son Died by Suicide, and This is Why We Want Mental Health Resources in the Schools." And for those of you who have been listening to me for all of these years, you probably remember that I began in Montreal as a school social worker and then was promoted with a couple of other of my colleagues to be directors of the Greater Montreal School Social Services Program, so that every single school in Greater Montreal was really focusing on mental health. And we were able to put together pupil personnel teams. The teachers were involved, so that, for example, if a teacher who spends so many hours a day with students was noticing that a child was withdrawn or was acting out or was having difficulty with friends or was having difficulty academically and was not responding to, you know, different things that the teacher and the environment was trying to give to the child, every single child was then referred to a school social worker. And sometimes the school social worker would refer the child to a school psychologist for psychological testing. And it was a wonderful, wonderful team approach. And I remember that every single week in every single school, and of course I had a large, large staff, we would then be able to just review all of the different cases that were being referred to the pupil personnel team. And in that way, the great thing about this was that no child was ever left behind. Excuse me. You know, we had a team of very concerned professionals, you know, beginning with the teachers, who knew exactly. They knew exactly what they needed to look for. And instead of looking the other way and labeling a student as just somebody who was inattentive or unresponsive or an underachiever, we were able with every single child to really try to get to the root of the problems. And I'm sure that it probably saved many, many children's lives. And I believe that in every school, in every elementary school, in every junior high and high school in the United States, both public and private schools, these kinds of teams should be really put together so that we're looking at mental health in a way, in almost a preventative type of a fashion, so that as soon as we're starting to see that a child is struggling, whether or not it's struggling academically or with you know, his or her friends or socially, that we're not just going to stand back and talk about poor Johnny or poor Annie, but that we have a system in place where we will be intervening, you know, really right at the beginning when we're starting to see problems surface. And in that way, we are going to be able to prevent a lot of disasters. And I mean, I think that the program, I mean, yes, it was a Canadian program in the province of Quebec. And in those days, we were not concerned about money and health insurance. And those of us who are Canadian, although I have both American and Canadian citizenship, things are different because we weren't concerned about whether or not our health care, which of course is free, was going to be able to pay for additional resources and additional services like social services and psychological services. So lessons to be learned, that if you are a teacher or if you are a guidance counselor or a parent and you are seeing that your child is struggling, maybe spending too much time in front of the screen, maybe spending too much time playing games by him or herself, and you have concerns, you have that gut feeling that something may potentially not be right, I'm hoping that you are going to give yourself permission, because really we don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be entering these kinds of situations too late. Rather, I would rather err on the side of caution. I would rather refer a child for psychological testing or to see a social worker or psychotherapist and have the professional say, look, you know, this child is just going through some normal ups and downs and no need to be concerned, rather than to hang back and have to deal with the crisis later on. So the time now, cannot believe it, is 3:57 Eastern Standard Time, and how quickly an hour comes and goes when you are talking about important issues. And I love doing the show, and I love educating and empowering you with knowledge that I am hoping on a daily basis that you are able to really take in and implement in your life. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first message, and of course, this is what the whole show has been about today, is to make sure that you find ways to love yourself and to do things that are really, really in your best interest. So be mindful and be good to yourself. And of course, the second message is that we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. And I hope you're going to take in both of these very, very important messages. So I hope you have a really good rest of the day and have a good week. And again, I really look forward to hearing from you. You can contact me through my bdcone.com website. I appreciate your questions. I appreciate your comments. So everybody have a good day and take care of yourself and love yourself and think about loving each other a little bit better than we have maybe in the past. And I will talk with you next week and every week here live on the Progressive Radio Network. So take good care, be well, and we'll talk later. Bye-bye.